And hello, everybody. It is Wednesday night, June the 12th, 2024. And John, how are you?
I'm doing good, Walden. How are you?
Good. Is Larry just eating away, sleeping?
No, Larry's in the other room doing some audio streaming on something or other, so he'll be around.
Okay. Well, we just, you know.
I think starting in December, yeah. So he'll be around eventually. I don't know when.
Well, this is our 20th time we've been together. Gosh, if you add up all the hours Dennis and I have been doing this, it's got to be close to 50 hours just on the air talking about the history of Marder. And so, Dennis Hart, welcome back.
It is a pleasure to be here, Walden and John. It's hard to believe it's been 20 years. It really is. It seems like we started just yesterday. But I'm so glad to be back because I think what we're about to do tonight is pretty important for the history of network radio.
That's true. You do have a love and a passion for the show, don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're talking about NBC Radio's Monitor, which was on the air from 1955 to 1975. June 12th, 1955, as a matter of fact, is when it debuted.
John and I had a discussion last night. So what do you know about the mutual version of Monitor that started in 42?
I know nothing about that.
We don't either because I made it up.
That's right.
Well, thank you. The mutual version of Monitor.
Mutual Monitor has a ring to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, but they would have had to have done it out of a phone booth, right?
Yeah, probably so.
So we're talking NBC Radio's Monitor just briefly. I want to say also that we're going to be joined tonight by two of my two partners in this project where we've been putting up 10 new hours of Monitor on the monitorbeacon.net website, monitorbeacon.net. 10 new hours a month for 66 months, 660 new hours up there. So let me first introduce George Miller, who is in or near Chicago tonight on this Wednesday night. George is the keeper of the tapes, and we're going to get into exactly what that means. But George, welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here again.
And Louis Castaing is supposed to join us tonight. He's the third member of our triumvirate out of Louisiana. Louis, if you're listening, call. Louis is a very important part of this thing. So briefly, I know a lot of people listening already know radio history, but Monitor was the savior of NBC Radio for 20 years, the brainchild of the great Sylvester L. Weaver, the president of NBC, who realized that in 1955, network television was killing network radio. In every single city across the country, when television debuted, network audiences on radio went down. People wanted to see Jack Benny and Burns. They didn't want to hear him anymore. So he came up, Pat Weaver did, with this astoundingly brilliant idea, a 40-hour, you heard me, 40-hour continuous broadcast from 8 a.m. Saturday to midnight Sunday, where he would have hosts in a place called Radio Central tossing to everything interesting, entertaining, or important around the world. Monitors said they were going to go places and do things, and they did. If you didn't like what was going on the air at that moment, stick around for 3 or 4 minutes, it would change. And the beauty of it was that unlike the traditional half hour, an hour long comedy, variety, musical shows, where you had to tune in at the top of the hour or the bottom of the hour right then, or you'd miss the who got killed and what happened, Monitor, you could tune in anytime, and you'd hear something new. And it became really the first portable network radio show. You could take it on the beach in a transistor radio. You could take it in your car. You could listen at home. It was brilliant, and it saved NBC. It became a smash commercial success. He had big name hosts. I mean, big namers. Dave Garraway was one of the big ones in the early going. Frank Blair was there, and many other hosts, Hugh Downs. And for the next 20 years, Monitor, in a slightly different form, it got reduced as we went along, kept going on network radio on weekends, called Weekend Monitor, and it had a tremendous input or influence on the audience. In the heyday, in the early 1960s, it had 30 million listeners a weekend. One out of six Americans were listening to NBC Monitor. So it saved NBC. It was a brilliant concept. No one had ever come up with it. And so that's what we're going to be talking about tonight, is Monitor. And we'll mention the website several times. You can go to it while we're on the air if you like. And by the way, George, and I see Louis is locked in now, but his microphone's not on. We're in our 24th year on the website. We've had 499,100 visits. We expect to hit 500,000 this month, and that is quite
a milestone.
Quite an accomplishment for a show that's been off the air for so long. Louis Castaing, welcome. It's Wednesday night, buddy. Louis, are you there? Well, I don't hear him, George. Do you hear him?
No, I'm still listening. All Come right. in, Louis. Over to you, Louis.
To you, Louis.
Here, Louis. Here, Louis.
Louis. All right, it's not Louis. He'll join in some other form. Okay, I've described monitor a little bit. George, you are the keeper of the tapes. And by the tapes, I mean this guy, Warren Gerby, who is the man who saved monitor. He was born in 1945 in Queens. And during his young years, he recorded hundreds, maybe thousands of hours of monitor at his place on weekends with his dad and mom's help. Here's the amazing thing. A lot of us recorded monitor. None of us kept it because we always thought it would be here forever. So we recorded over it. He kept it. And George, you have it. How did you get it?
Kind of by accident. About 30 years ago now, there used to be, I don't think it's around anymore, there was a little fan magazine called Radio News. And in the back of the each edition, they had a little classified section. And I was big into, you know, vintage news broadcasts. And Warren was into monitor, of course. And we both took out classified ads, one edition. And it caught my eye that he had been looking for more people that had recorded monitor because he wanted to switch and trade off. And I was looking for, you know, more news broadcasts, network news broadcasts, especially from NBC. And I knew embedded in the monitor broadcast would be NBC, you know, top of the hour news broadcasts. So I contacted him, and I even went so far as to send him a reel of a monitor that I'd had from the initial broadcast from June of 1955. So we started a little correspondence there. And didn't really come to anything initially, but unfortunately, not long after that, I had sent him a letter too, you know, spelling it out that you know, I looking for news broadcasts and, you know, whatever I could do to help him out and if he could help me out. And unfortunately, about a year or two after you know, we both contacted each other, I got a letter from two of his friends telling me that he had unfortunately died back in January of the year 2000. And they told me that he had amassed this huge collection of reel-to-reel tapes of monitor that he had recorded every weekend starting like the early 1960s through the final broadcast, which incidentally has his little... you know, testimonial from him with John Bartholomew Tucker, I think it is. And so he's got these thousands of broadcasts spread over hundreds of reels there. So I purchased them from his two. He was a school teacher in Flushing, New York. He taught mathematics, I believe. And his two friends were going through his, they were the executors of his estate. I don't think he had any living survivors at that point, but they contacted me via the letter that I had written to him long ago and far away at that point and said that, you know, they got this immense amount of monitor recordings and would I be interested in purchasing them. So I leaped at the chance, and I swear to God, they sent me, you know, the whole kit and caboodle in about two giant boxes, which were ripping apart. I think they sent them in refrigerator boxes. They were just leaking out the sides because, you know, it was probably the weight of a Sherman tank, the immense amount of tapes that they crammed in this, a couple of giant boxes, cardboard boxes. But fortunately, they arrived pretty much intact here, and I've had them since about 1990, I guess. And I sat on them for years because I've been so busy with things. I'm a radio fan from, you know, the golden age. And I sat on them, and then I said, gee, you know, there must be somebody interested in this other than me. So I did a little research online, and lo and behold, I noticed Dennis Hart's Monitor Tribune site, and I sent him an email, but it ended up in the dead letter office of email for somehow. I just didn't connect my end to his end, and this went on for about 2 years, unfortunately. But then I figured out the technology behind it, and about the third year, just a random shot in the dark, we finally connected. And basically, the rest is history. We've been at this for like the last 5 years, and as Dennis said, to the best of my ability, I try to, you know, go through all this sea of Monitor broadcasts throughout the years and decades, and try to provide as best I can at least 10 hours of new Monitor material each month. And in the process, I clean them up technologically with my software. And Dennis had a little dog, by the way, that I do a dogectomy on these recordings, because every now and then the dog wanders in the room, because Warren wasn't too adept at the technology that was at his beck and call, and he recorded with the microphone rather than patch cords and you know the latest technology that was available. So occasionally you would hear a barking dog in the background, or else his parents having a fight in the background, or whatever might interfere with the nature of the broadcast. So I excise that from the recordings and clean up the hiss and the flutter and wow and any other kind of things that would detract from the listening pleasure.
Now, if our audience thinks this is an easy process, George, you and I and Louie know it is not, because you have thrown out a lot of tapes because the audio quality is simply not good.
Well, the problem was he... and I don't know the reason or why or wherefore behind it, but I can't remember how many I threw out, but I threw out plenty because the audio quality just wasn't there. He would, on occasion, not record his local station, which was the owned and operated headquarters of NBC back in the day in 30 Rockefeller Plaza, WNBC. He'd reach out to, you know, stations in Schenectady and Connecticut, WTIC, I think it was, and well, the signal was pretty distant, and you get a lot of atmospherics, and you know, those were unusable. But on the plus side, there quite a lot of times he'd record off of the WNBC FM signal, which was the far superior signal, and those were pristine.
So to clarify all of this, we have been doing this for 66 consecutive months, about 10 hours a month, 660 yes. new hours on the site.
Right.
And it is remarkable that, I mean, I find it remarkable that you are still doing this and still interested in doing it. And I love it, but it takes a whole lot of your time, and you digitize it. But then it goes on to our second member of our triumvirate here, Louie Castaing, who does a little bit of tweaking with it. Louie, I see you up there. Are you on the air with us now? You know, one of these times I'm going to stop calling Louie because he's not on the air.
This is your big moment, Louie. Don't blow it.
Come on, call in, buddy.
Come on.
You can do it.
Come on, Louie, you can do it.
Louie, the number is...
Louie.
This is for everybody in the world, okay? The number tonight to call in is 715-545- 2071. Let me repeat it. 714 is the area code. 545-2071. Louie, call the phone number. And
I talked to Louie just this afternoon, just hours ago, when we compared notes and, you know.
And if you want to talk, anybody in the world wants to talk to us tonight about Monitor, we're here. We kind of enjoy talking about this. So
And let me interject this too. If any of our immense listening audience should buy some good fortune have any Monitor recordings that they recorded, or any leads on any material that might be out there that you could give us a lead to, we would greatly appreciate it and compensate you for it, and do everything in our power to make life good for you if you can afford that some more material for us.
Yeah, so let's again be clear. It is Warren Gerby, who is the man who literally saved Monitor. Now, I put up the website in 2000, late 2000. Warren had passed away earlier in the year. There's no doubt in my mind, if he'd lived, he'd lived to be 55 years old. If he had lived, he would have been someone who would have, he would have put up that website, and we would have had all these hours decades earlier. But unfortunately, he passed away. And fortunately, you got the tapes. And here we are. Look, I have to ask you this, and I asked you this before we went on the air, George. How many more tapes do we have? How many more hours would you estimate we have before we run out of this project?
Well, he recorded right up to the end. I mean, we've got, I'm mopping up on some of the stuff that I had, you know, some of the reels that I had gone through before, but put aside for one reason or another, and I'm trying to glean some more material off of the reels that I thought I was done with, and you can bear witness to this, Dennis. Over the last month or so, I've gleaned more material from 1965 and 1967 and 68. So there might be more of that material from those particular years coming. And 1969 seems to be winding down, but we've got another treasure trove of 1970 and 1, 2, and 3. And the notes that I made in the boxes here, that it was an excellent sound because he had switched over to the WNBC FM signal, which is, you know, a real nice clear signal. You don't pick up atmospherics off of FM signals like thunderstorms and, you know, crackle from the old super heterodyne style radios, that kind of stuff that were available then.
So monitor change, George, as you know, and we've been listening over these past years with your new audio. Monitor changed over the years. The format changed. The music changed. Themes changed. It had to because the culture was changing. It's right. Very interesting. In the early years, and I don't find the early years nearly as compelling. I find them technically wonderful because no one was doing what Monitor was doing all weekend long, going live everywhere. But it was boring. It was rather boring. It was slow-paced. It was relatively slow paced. And then in 61, they made a change, cut down from two hosts to one. And it continued to evolve until about 1967, when I think that was the highlight.
It peaked.
Oh, it sounded so good in 1967.
Well, they added jingles, too. I love the jingles. I still got them running through my head all the time, all amount of jingles that they had done starting in 1967. Starting in January of 67, they started with jingles. I don't know who the group was that made the jingles. I'd give my right arm to know who they were, but I to this day, I still don't know who created the jingles for the Monitor weekend broadcast, but they were pretty catchy and, you know.
And it wasn't just the jingles. They changed the music to update it, and they also had more contributors in 67 on each weekend show than they would ever have again. Let me just name a few of these folks. These were all on Monitor every weekend in 1967. Chet Huntley, Bob Considine, Hugh Downs, Arlene Francis, Barbara Walters. Yeah, Barbara Walters. Dr. Joyce Brothers, Al Capp, Mel Ellen, Kurt Gowdy, Joe Garagiola, Sandy Koufax, Lindsay Nelson, Nichols and May doing their comedy routine, Ted Webb and then Chris Economaki doing Sport of Speed, Gene Shalit doing movie reviews. Every weekend, think about this, network radio is dying on ABC and CBS and Mutual, and NBC has this immense amount of talent. George, I'm still amazed that they were able to do that in 67.
And then on top of that, on occasion they'd have fill-in hosts like Jim Backus and Van Johnson and Tony Randall, for instance, who was a hoot in his own way, you know, and you know, that they'd fill in for the people that couldn't, you know, do the broadcast for some particular week.
It also strikes me that they had the most energetic and best-sounding group of hosts they would ever have in 67. Gene Rayburn had been on Saturday mornings for about a year, and he would stay there much of the rest of Monitor's life. He was brilliant on Saturday mornings, as you know, George, because of the energy and enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah, I think he was, wasn't he, by the way, the longest serving host, communicator, as they used to say, for Monitor?
Oh, yeah, he was on for 13 of the 20 years, which is incredible.
Oh, my gosh, wow.
Ed McMahon, Johnny's announcer on Tonight, he was doing Saturday afternoons. Ted Steele was doing Saturday nights, the old band leader who sounded really, really good.
Brad Crandall on Sunday nights.
And Henry Morgan. Absolutely a wonderful record.
To yeah, great. Radio's original Bad Boy.
Yeah. I think Bluey Castillo. Am I hearing some feedback here? Is that from?
Yeah, you're hearing it through his phone.
Yep.
Getting a little bit of feedback there.
Turn down your radio. Say.
Turn down my radio. Let's see.
Turn it down.
So oh, there he is. I know that voice.
That's Louis Castillo.
Yeah.
Take a bow, Louis. Okay. Take a bow.
I did. Okay.
Thank God you're back.
Louis, welcome.
Yeah, I don't know. This is like Dennis's old call-in radio days. You know, turn your radio down.
We're on a 7-second delay here. Hey, Louis, we've already gone over how George got the tapes and what he does as part of this triumvirate to get them on the air. We've done it for 66 months. Sends George digitizes it, which is an amazing process in itself. But then he sends it to you, and you do something else. Let's talk about what your role in all of it is.
Well, I mean, I clean it up a little bit, and you know, there's not—I don't do any magic on it. George insists on doing everything himself, basically, and so let me see if I can figure out how to get rid of this
the reverb.
Yeah, although this is very much radio, you know. If you want want radio, you get reverb, but you really need to do
it. I consider myself to be the luckiest, yeah. luckiest man in the world.
Yes.
Well,
thank you, babe.
Louis makes sure that what's coming out to me, and I get, I'm third, listen to all the hours. Let me just say this, okay? No one's skipping through hours. George has to digitize a moment by moment basis. There's no fast forwarding through these tapes, okay? He has to listen to it, and then we listen to it on this end in California. And I'm looking for, is there any inconsistency, and there often is with Warren, some of his notations, any inconsistencies in what we're hearing on the air and the dates that he says it aired? And sometimes there is inconsistency. Thank goodness that occasionally we have Monitor News on the hour and we can check it out, or Mel Allen Sports. That's an easy check. But, and I'm also looking to see, you know, making sure that they meet what we really need to have. We try to cut off any extraneous stuff before the tone that introduces news on the hour. We try to cut it off after the chimes at 58:50. So it's a three-person process. We're all putting in the time on this deal. And really, I'm having the time of my life, George. And I just want you to rush it so I can get through it in my life.
It's like that old baseball thing, Tinker to Evers to Chance.
Yeah. And we each catch something occasionally, and it takes three people. It really does. And it can be a very little thing. But Warren sometimes, and he was brilliant at recording this stuff, would put the wrong dates. And the hours are sometimes questionable, but knowing Monitor as well as we all do, we can figure out what he really meant, what the real hour was. That it sounds crazy, but that's just the way it works.
He can't fool us.
He tries, though. He tries. Louis, you're the quiet guy here. George and I are the motor mouths. You listen to Monitor almost all your life. How did you get started listening to Monitor, and why did you like it? Well, we got
Uh-oh.
Rid of there, didn't
Uh-oh.
We? Got rid of the reverb. Oh, Louis, come on. George, you and I are going to have to carry this puppy. I think we can do it, don't you?
I'm up to it.
Okay.
Over to you, Chet.
Well, why do you think Monitor was interesting, number one, and important, number two? Because clearly it was. It was on for 20 years, and it was a hit. What made it a hit?
A variety. It was a little bit of, you know, it was kind of segued into the era of rock and roll, and you know, wasn't for teenagers or, you know, the hip crowd or anything like that, the Beatles crowd or, you know, the Elvis crowd. It was for basically their parents, you know, and it was a smorgasbord of variety and entertainment that was popular at this time, and you know, it was had the news and information, and just, you know, like easy to listen to, and I'm not being derogatory in this remark, but like ear candy, something that's easy to listen to and informative, and has had great, well, not always great music that they selected for it, but it was mainstream music, you know, like, you know, the people, the singers and the orchestrations that were popular at the time. One thing that struck me back in the middle 60s was listening to these things again, how many, you know, people in the music industry tried to replicate the sound of Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, especially, you know, not necessarily their you know, commercial record releases, but even in the commercials that they did, it all had that taste of Tijuana Brass behind it, you know.
I plugged into Monitor about 1963 or 4. I was, well, 9 or 10 years old. Heard it for the first time on a Saturday morning on KMJ Radio here in Fresno, the NBC affiliate. And I was shocked because I'd never heard anything like it. First of all, it was Mel Allen was the host on that Saturday morning, and he was about to turn it over to David Wayne, and David Wayne was there. And Mel was talking about how David would be here. And I knew who these guys were, and it was so big sounding. It came from this place called Radio Central in Midtown Manhattan, and it sounded big time. Well, it was big time.
And yeah,
I was locked in almost immediately from that moment on, 1962 or three, until it ended. I listened every weekend of my life. I grew up, went through junior high, high school, college. It was entertaining. It was informative. I learned a heck of a lot. Ring Around the World took you everywhere in the world where things were going on. I knew the correspondents. I mean, if you watched Chet Huntley and David Brinkley on NBC, on the Huntley Brinkley Report, there's Chet Huntley right. doing Monitor on weekends. I knew right. who Francis was. She was on What's My Line. Mm-hmm. I knew who Hugh Downs was. He was the host of the Today Show when he was on.
Right. Monitor. He was every place. And
I loved it. It was exciting to me to listen to Monitor.
And it had so many household names associated with it, people that you knew from, you know, television and radio at the same time, too. You know, I mean, Hugh Downs, for instance, he was started off in Chicago back in the 1940s and 50s, locally at, you know, the owned and operated station here in Chicago, which is no longer, you know, in existence, WMAQ, and the eventually found his way to New York, and you know, the rest is history. You know, he was did the wide range of just about everything. I mean, he was the announcer on the Tonight Show when Jack Parr was at the helm, and you know, the game shows, Concentration, for instance. And later in his life, towards the end, he was you know, went over to ABC with you know, Barbara Walters, and what was the name of that show that
2020
they did 2020, correct? Right? Lived to be close to 100 years old. He made it to 99, and God love him, you know.
Yeah, and you brought up an interesting thing. You said Hugh was the announcer for Jack Parr. Indeed, he was. Well, Gene Rayburn had been Steve Allen's announcer.
Steve Allen, correct.
And Ed McMahon was Johnny's announcer on Tonight.
Right.
So it was just a given that if you worked at NBC during those years, you were expected to show up on Monitor in some form or fashion because the network thought it was important that you go on radio on weekends. And so you had Joe Garagiola, who had just come off being the voice of the New York Yankees. Mel Allen had been the voice of the New York Yankees. Sandy Koufax came on right after he retired. Lindsey Nelson was the voice of the New York Mets in 1967. They were all there. Kurt Gowdy was the voice of NBC Sports. He would sit, he did Monitor Outdoors. Kurt was there every weekend on tape, but he occasionally hosted Monitor as well. And that was made it so impressive to me because I cared about that. I was a media guy. I was a nerd.
Yeah, when Monitor first came online in the mid to late 1950s, they took some of the, you know, handful of, you know, popular radio shows from the 30s, 40s, and early 50s, and they made use of them. Fibber McGee and Molly did 5-minute vignettes up until, what was it, 1959, I think, and I think early on they had Ed Gardner reprise Duffy's Tavern little vignettes for them, and Ernie Kovacs contributed, you know, little 5-minute pieces for them.
Let's not forget about the great Bob and Ray.
Bob and Ray, correct. Yeah, they were They were all over the place on the 12th anniversary show that they did on June 12th and 13th of 1967.
Yeah, we're at the top of the hour right now. I love doing this. Wherever you are in the world, it's 1 minute after the hour. And this is the Monitor anniversary show that we do every year at this time, celebrating NBC Radio's legendary Monitor, which was on.
And you're on the Monitor Beacon.
You're on the Monitor Beacon, NBC Monitor. You're going to hear Monitor, by the way, later this evening. Yesterday, USA, I have sent them 6 hours of Monitor, Gene Rayburn, Ed McMahon, Henry Morgan, Brad Crandall from 67. And depending upon when we get the heck off the air here, they'll be playing a lot of those hours. Bob and Ray were an interesting thing that Pat Weaver came up with, as was Miss Monitor. Bob and Ray were there in the studio in the early years, live. Their job was to sit off in a corner, and if anything went wrong, if there was a line break between a live report, if something broke, a tape broke on a taped report, they had to ad-lib their way out of it. They were brilliant. Virtually everything they did was ad-lib. They'd win a Peabody Award for their efforts. It was so good. And that was an incredible thing. That was one of the little tricks that Weaver had put together, is Bob and Ray live. And then Miss Monitor, whose name was Teddy Thurman, she was a fashion model. She'd been on all the major fashion magazine covers. Somebody thought of her when Monitor was being put together. And they asked her to come in and cut a tape. And she had this breathy, sexy.
Yeah, just dripping with sex for the weather reports.
Well, yeah, dripping is a good word when you're talking about radio. And they put lush orchestral music behind her. So the first night this aired, June 12th, Jack Gould of the New York Times, the columnist on Monday, wrote about this woman who showed up on Monitor the night before, and her voice sounded like an invitation to an unforgettable evening. And it was. And she stayed on for years. She's a wonderful lady. I interviewed her for the book that I did. And Teddy was on this show a few years ago before she passed away. You may remember that. And there was an earthquake.
We had an earthquake. Remember when we were on the air, it was an earthquake in Palm Springs, what happened, if you might recall.
No kidding.
Yep.
Walden, fill us in on that. I hadn't heard of that. What happened?
I think it was about 2007. It was live on a Saturday night, and Patricia and I had Dennis and Teddy on, and it was a typical shake, rack, round, roll. It wasn't too big, but it was, it happened while Teddy was on the air, and we talked about it a little bit, but yeah.
How'd she handle it? She must have been in years at
just
that point.
No,
miss a beat, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
She said, in Palm Springs, it's 65 and shaking. She was just a dynamic individual, and you either loved her or you hated her, and most guys loved her. She became probably the most famous voice in the United States for a period of time. The only other woman who, most famous female voice, only other woman who could have matched it was Lucille Ball. And for years after she left Monitor, she moved out to Hollywood, and she would be asked to do Miss Monitor at parties until near the end of her life. And she would do it. She would say, in Atlanta, it's 33 degrees sultry. Tokyo, 91 degrees humid. And yeah, she was selling.
She'd warm up any cold situation.
Oh, yeah. She was wonderful. Miss Monitor. And then the other gimmick that Weaver had was, of course, the Monitor Beacon, that sound. And you can hear all of this on the website, monitorbeacon.net. It was just briefly, it was long-distance phone lines that they recorded, re-recorded, played it backward, amplified it, and it became the unforgettable Monitor Beacon that opened every half hour or hour of the show. So it was, for its time, a remarkably progressive and innovative broadcast. In fact, almost till the very end, it sounded so good, it could air today. Now, you couldn't do it today because it would cost too much money to bring the talent in. You could not do it. But it was wonderful to hear. It was exciting for this kid growing up in Central California. Just exciting.
I guess the word is dynamic. You knew what to expect, but you didn't know what to expect. It kept changing a little bit all the time, and it was always interesting.
It was. It was always interesting. And if something major happened, they'd be on top of it. They would break into the format, of course. Now it would be a lot easier with the internet and with satellite technology that they did not have then. But all they needed was a phone anywhere in the world, and they could be on the air with a live report. And they did that so many times. It was amazing. But on the website, thanks to you, George, and of course, Warren, the originator of all this stuff, we have some historic hours of monitoring. I mean, historic hours. The night LBJ announced and shocked the world he would not run for president in March of 1968.
That caught every reporter off guard. They were like Ralph Cramden, hamna, hamna, hamna. They didn't know what to say. They weren't expecting that. They didn't know it. There was no advance warning when they heard. They were just speechless.
I remember watching CBS and Dan Rather was flummoxed, absolutely speechless. He had nothing to say because it was so shocking. We have that. That hour is on monitor in 1968. Joe Garagiola happened to be the host that night, for heaven's sakes. And he was stunned by all of this. But then when you get to, and these are the most tragic hours that we have on monitor, in 1968, in June, when Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was assassinated after winning the California primary out here in June. And that weekend, Joe Garagiola, we have all 3 hours of him, was stricken. And monitor turned everything.
You could hear it in his voice. He was shaken.
He was shaken, and they did a magnificent job. Live reports from Arlington. Live reports. Remember, the train was bringing RFK's body to Arlington from New York, and it was delayed hour after hour because so many people were alongside the tracks slowing the train down.
Unfortunately, the people were lining the tracks. Unfortunately, it hit a couple of people, and they lost their lives as the train ran across the tracks.
This was really monitor at its finest. It was live. It was what's taking place at this moment. You heard it in the voices of the reporters who were at the cathedral waiting. You heard it throughout. And it's heartbreaking. It's historic. And that's why what we're doing on the website is so important, because it is heartbreaking and historic. And future historians, I hope they come to this site. They're going to learn a lot about who we were as a country, a heck of a lot.
Yes.
Well, I've just left you speechless, haven't I? I've rendered you speechless, George, and that's unusual for me to be able to do this.
Well, no more speechless than Lewis. I mean, he's got to be out in cyberspace someplace. Come on, over to you, Lewis. Come on, we're all opening the channel. Come on, let's go. He sounded so good there for about 2 minutes, and where'd you go, Louis? We need you.
Well,
we're counting on you.
We'll keep going here until Louis reestablishes himself. Okay, this is live radio, folks, and that's what live radio. We love talking about monitor, and I know we sound like we're proselytizing. So here's the deal. If you think we're lying about all this, and I hope you don't, go to monitorbeacon.net. You can go right now, monitorbeacon.net. Hundreds of hours of monitor by year in chronological order and by host. You'll see who the hosts were. And listen to it and tell me if you don't think that's the best network radio show you ever heard in your life, if you heard any network radio. And then you might want to ask yourself a simple question, why radio is not doing this today. And the reason is simple, George, money.
Correct. Yes, everything's money, and especially in these inflationary times that we're living in right now, unfortunately.
Well, was it in the black in 75, Dennis? Was it still profitable in 75, or did it eventually go into the red?
And near the end, it was really breaking even, okay? Because they were down to 120 stations, many in the smaller markets. The big stations had decided they were going to put their disc jockeys on live on weekends to do timely temperature. And so they'd cut back. Monitor was down 12 live hours a weekend with only two hosts, the same ones on Saturday and Sunday. And they were not nearly as diverting or entertaining. They weren't going as many places or doing as many things. And I'm the first to say, in 1975, and this was through January of 75 when it went off the air, Monitor, not the monitor that we grew up with and grew to love. NBC did not do a very good job of thinking ahead, of planning for the future. They took monitor, we've talked about this over the years, when they should not have done it, and they put on the air this news and information service to replace it. It lasted about a year and a half. It was never cleared by more stations. Because
that crashed and burned after about 1 year and a half. It just didn't cut it.
They had bought it. This was amazing to me, George and Walden. And I got this from executives, that Jack Thayer became president of the network, he went to lunch with somebody and said, the problem you have with NBC is your network lines are lying low. And he said, what does that mean? You're not on the air most of the time. You're dark during the week except for news on the hour. You got to have those lines up. And the only way to do that is to do an all news. Here's the problem with Mr. Thayer. I say this in a negative way. I call him Jack Thayer the Slayer because he killed Monitor. He never surveyed any affiliate station about whether Monitor should come off the air or whether news and information should go on. He never did this. He just announced Monitor's gone and we're putting this all news thing on. The stations didn't want all news. They didn't want to have their airtime taken up 24/7. And as you say, George, it crashed, burned, and was obliterated very quickly.
Well, it wasn't long after that before the entire NBC radio network just faded into oblivion, too. I mean, I can't remember exactly what the time frame was, but it eventually evolved. Westwood One, as it exists today, bought all the NBC radio facilities, and Westwood One is very much alive and in business today. But, it was sad to see the demise of America's first radio network happened so quickly.
And it shouldn't have happened the way it did. We've talked before for years now, what could have been done to save Monitor. Well, here's the first thing. Keep it on the air on Saturday mornings because it was still the best cleared 3 hours of Monitor, fully loaded with advertisers. It never diminished on advertising because advertisers knew people were on the road on Saturday morning. Millions of people that were tuned into the radio. There were no baseball preemptions at 9 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday. 9 to noon was the 3 hours Monitor was on live. You could have kept that thing. You could have kept it. You could have kept Saturday afternoon Monitor. It would have needed hosts who were capable of running the show on a faster basis. And they actually had them. John Bartholomew Tucker and Big Wilson were pretty good at what they did. They really were. But they dumped it, and you can't bring it back. And it's unfortunate because when Monitor went, it was only another year or so before the entire NBC radio network went.
Well, another problem was that all the local markets were starting to gravitate into their own, talent, the local personalities and all that stuff, which, did nothing to extend the life of Monitor. In certain markets, it got preempted for, during the summertime or, season round. If they had a sporting event, baseball game, hockey game, basketball game, Monitor was preempted whatever time of the day that the game was being played,
The killer, I think, it was a combination of things in the late 60s, no, early 70s. Let me change that. First of all, the first station to preempt Monitor in a major market was KFI in Los Angeles. As my friend Don Spuler, who's been a supporter of the website from day one, and he's listening right now in LA, Don tells us that the last time KFI cleared Monitor live was on the 12th anniversary show in 1967. Well, NBC did not own KFI. That was always a problem because they couldn't guarantee clearance. So you lose KFI. All right, 50,000 bangers at 640. And then they came up with this thing called Custom Monitor.
Poison.
Oh, yeah. Because that allowed stations not to clear the entire show, just the sponsored features. And guess who were the first stations not to clear the entire show? KNBR in San Francisco owned and operated. WRC in Washington owned and operated. And once you lost those owned and operated stations, how could you go to your affiliates and say, you got to clear this show, George? Because it's so good. And they come back and say, but you can't get your O&Os to clear it.
Yeah.
Well, you had a problem, too.
Lewis, you're back. Take a bow, Lewis.
I'm back, yes. I'm enraptured by this whole thing. But you're forgetting WNBC, which is, of course, the mother station.
Yeah.
And that one, they lost. In fact, you talk about how nice the latter George Gerby material sounded because it was recorded on FM. Well, that was because that's the place where you could get Monitor. You couldn't get it on AM in New York anymore. And so, yeah, sure, it would sound better. Of course, FM was, you know, the weak sister in all of this. And nobody really had much use for FM. So you could put monitor on and just burn it off that way. But I don't know. I
imagine in some markets, though, there was simulcast, both AM and FM for a while.
No, you didn't do that anymore, though. That's the thing. There was a time when you were prohibited from doing that. You couldn't simulcast anymore. At least you had to stay at least 50% of your broadcast schedule.
Was that an FCC call?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know in the early 50s into the mid, it was a lot of stations out here on the West Coast simulcast, and then eventually separated. So,
well, yeah, but I mean it was a big change that took place, mm-hmm. And that's the
that was before the FCC changed the rules, I guess.
Yeah,
it was, and so and that also made things better for us in terms of George's tapings because he couldn't. George had an annoying habit of some reason, and it's beyond
no,
me.
No, not every, George. Warren, not George.
No, George. You're right, Warren.
Don't confuse me with Warren's annoying habits.
No, I keep getting that because, anyway. No, all right, Warren had good. Is that better?
Yeah. You're back on track again. Keep going.
Yes, okay. he used to, and you know this, George, he would go off to stations, in
distant stations of the half hour.
Distant stations, not only on the half hour, but on the 15-minute breaks. Right. You know, and so
you'd lose the signal too. It sounded like a transmission from a distant galaxy. It was so
it really sounded like And so
well, naturally, when I edit these tapes, that all comes out. You don't. I don't want to lose our audience there from due to technical problems beyond our control. So that gets snipped out of there for listening sake.
But I don't know what he was trying to do. To be honest with you, I don't know why he thought he should take that time to go to another station just to hear their local cut-in. Monitor.
Well, on occasion he'd have his parents record it, and that did not happen.
Oh, no, that was much better.
They
yes.
just let it roll, and just they yes. had better things to do than sit there for 3 hours and tune in other stations there when they lost interest with whatever was being broadcast.
And the other thing, of course, was that his dog wasn't there.
The dog, yeah,
yeah.
God.
Yeah. So, but
that
I,
dog
you know,
is looking up from hell right now.
Well, that's not nice. But anyway, he was actually, if it wasn't for him, I've got to say that it was his interest and his,
devotion.
Devotion, yes. I mean, we wouldn't have any of this. And I can remember when I got your email because you couldn't get to Dennis. Because for some reason, and Dennis can maybe explain this to me, to the whole audience, why he cut off. He was Monit Man, it wasn't Monitor Man.
Was the email name already taken that you could not spell it out in its full Monitor Man? So you opted for Monit Man instead of Monitor Man.
No, I just thought it was an interesting derivative. I thought Monit Man was really cool. And I've kept that email address forever. I don't know why you were unable to reach.
Because Louis and I just assumed that the name was already taken, so you chopped off the final N and a couple of letters, Monitor, in favor of Monit.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is, I mean, it may make sense to Dennis, but it didn't make sense to me or you, although I, when you finally got a hold of me, then I realized that you had made that not a mistake, because I wouldn't have made it call it a mistake, but it was something, and So it was really unfortunate that for, I don't know how long you tried to get it.
That was about 2 years before I finally touched base with anybody, because it was just the, I think, what was it? We're getting far astray from Monitor, but it was just, I just, for lack of a better word, we just couldn't, I couldn't connect with you with the platform that you had your contact, you know, I think it was Gmail or something like that. I my technology at my end couldn't connect with yours, so. But we had a happy ending, didn't we?
We did.
Yes.
We did. And that's why I'm involved in this.
Serendipitous.
If you'd been able to get a hold of Dennis before, then I probably wouldn't even be involved. I wouldn't be talking right now because you needed me.
That's right.
You couldn't contact the great potentate up there. Before
you got involved, George, Louie and I had been wallowing for a number of years. We had put up everything we had on the website, and we had
all 10 minutes of it.
Well, I think it was...
It was a lot.
I'm kidding.
It was interesting because at one point we were purists, and we were only going to put up, you know... first of all, we determined that...
Just the spoken word version.
ASCAP or something by putting music on. Well, now...
Yeah, we're scared of getting sued.
We put music on all the time. And so
well, all you got to do is just claim you're doing it for educational purposes, and that clears
the path. That's the ruse we use.
Right.
It's not a ruse. We really are an educational nonprofit site.
Correct.
As it says on the front page, no money is made off the website. You can listen all you want free of charge on Monitor.
Right.
And so.
Yeah.
There's a funny story when Louie called.
We're just being facetious here. Nothing personal.
Yes.
We all love each other. We all hold hands together each night and sing Kumbaya.
I'm not taking it personally. It's purely professional. When Louie called me.
You've been in the business long enough, huh? All right. So go ahead.
2017 at the end of the year. And we were stuck at 80 hours on the website with no prospects of anything coming in. And I was lamenting it and fretting it.
Oh, God. Lamenting it.
And then Louis calls me and he says, there's this guy named George. And I said, great, what about it? And he said, he has tapes of Monitor. Well, I was interested, of course. Here's a guy. He might have 2 or 3 hours of Monitor. I'd like that. I called you up, George. I don't know if you remember this.
I remember, yeah.
And I said, I'm Dennis Hart. And you said, so what? And I said, well, listen, George, here's
I did not.
You did not.
Okay.
How many hours do you think you have? And I expected, honestly, to say maximum of 7-8 hours, and I would have been so happy. And you said, potentially hundreds. And I paused, and I said, what did you say? Hundreds of hours? How is that possible? Well, it's been possible. It's been possible.
Well, you know, that's the thing. How many hours do we have right now?
We have 700.
You keep running.
740 hours of Monitor, of which 660 have been supplied by George in the last 66 months.
So
and as as you pointed out, Dennis, Jack Benny was on the air to the tune of about 900 hours over his career from 1932 to 1955, 24 years.
No, 900 half hours.
900. Oh, that's even better. That's we got twice as much as Jackson does.
I mean, Walden, jump in here. I'm going to ask you a question. You always ask us questions. You know of any other website that has 750 hours of one show?
I know some sites off air that, you know, in the cloud that have more than that. Yeah. But you know, there are some, but not to the public per se, you know, for the public to see.
Is it radio related?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh,
right, right, right. Yeah.
Is it in the cloud and not up somewhere so the public could actually hear it?
If they knew the right people, they would have to get the password and get in that way. So, yeah, there are some places, but nothing.
Well, we don't want to get lawyers involved.
No. So,
no.
This is free of charge, everybody.
Yeah. Good.
Listen to
educational purposes only, ladies and gentlemen.
It is.
That's right. That's why I keep calling George Warren, so that. Warren George. So
I don't even know his dog's name, and all I do is hear his dog all the time.
Hey, Louis, before you got back on the air, George said, and I'm going to paraphrase, but George, if I'm wrong on this, you remind me.
Go ahead.
You said there may be as many hours still to come as we've already put up. Is that right?
I think that's fair to say, yeah.
Louis,
it's amazing.
Can we survive? What? Can we survive another 6 years?
Well, you know, I think that there's a caveat there because...
it kind of peaked. George, I think we're all in agreement it peaked at 1967. Wouldn't you all agree?
Yes.
Yeah, well, actually, my favorite year was 1964. I thought that was, you know, the best. And that's because that's when I was...
You know, by the way, I just thought of one, Dennis. The CBS Mystery Theater, there's 1,299 hours up on a particular website. So that
okay,
service is up.
That makes sense. Yeah, they were on 7 days a week for, what, about 10 years?
So when Joyce gets done in 5 years, you'll beat that.
Oh, well, thanks for the resounding vote of confidence, Walter.
Well, that's why you can't give up. I mean, Dennis is going to push you, Joyce, to get to beat the CBS Mystery Theater now.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm pushing
which
George.
Was kind of a ripoff of Inner Sanctum. It was
of
the
course.
Same opening as Inner Sanctum because
of
Hyman Brown that did both shows, you know.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm just pushing George because I'm worried it's getting harder and harder for me to stay healthy enough to put this up. You got to hurry.
Yeah, all three of us, we exchange all of our health issues every time we talk.
No, seriously. Well, we've never talked about it. Do you have a plan in place just in case you decide I'm going to walk away?
Yes.
Okay. That's good.
Oh, you do? That's interesting.
But that's putting it mildly. In case you walk away, that's putting it pretty
I'm
gently.
I'm being very nice about it, yeah. So you decide
to walk
away.
Assuming that you can walk away, right, yes.
So you do have a backup plan, just in case. Okay, good.
So we're not doing this all in vain, I take it, right?
No, there is a backup plan, and this website will remain a website forever. I'm not going to say a lot about this right now, Thing happens to me, but there is a person I have identified, and she is willing to do it. And she
thank
is
God.
A wonderful historian of radio and television, and I think she will do a great job. I came close about a year ago when I was having some serious health issues down in my body, and I came close, and I said, stand by. I may give it to you at some point, and I did not do it. I have not done it yet. So if you're listening, Person X out there, I'm still going to do it for a while. In there.
God love you, yes.
Well, now, wait, George, I have a serious question for you. I've never asked you this. If something were to happen to you, what happens to your tapes?
I turn it over to my dog, Maggie.
Ah.
No. No, let me bounce it back to you. What do you want me to do with the tapes? I've contemplated that, but I haven't come up with a decent answer. Ball's in your court. What contingency plans would you want me to do?
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, though, that George,
if I leave this stuff to my sister, if I leave all this, my collectibles to my sister, she's going to put into a landfill. So you got to think fast.
I can tell you what we do, John Larry and I. We have it backed up.
Yes, bird back. There we go.
We have it back. We have our stuff in four different places. So that way, if there's a fire or something happen,
an earthquake. Yeah, you're on the
yeah. So
West
that's
Coast,
why
yeah.
we always have it backed up in four locations. Okay. That's generally the right procedure for archive.
We have external drives, and we systematically share them with each other so that everybody has the same thing. So Spurtvac, although we work and help Spurtvac preserve it, we got stuff that they don't have because, you know, after a while, it just becomes a hassle to get everything into the library. But they've got enough. They have a lot anyway. So we just concentrate amongst the four or five of us, and it works.
George,
You guys keep talking for the next minute. I need to take a commercial break, if you know what I mean.
Okay, you bet.
Okay.
I'll be bad.
Okay.
But no, that's
is that where Film and 11 came into being? No.
That's generally what a lot of archives do. They back it up, and put in mobile places. And you can't have it on one external hard drive. Cause if that can go, you're dead. So you gotta have
it. Right. But the problem is, of course, that what George has is tapes, right, and right, not hard drive.
But I'm asking, George probably got everything transferred, a lot of it ahead of time, onto drives. He just had hard to clean them.
I mean, I don't think he had some, but I think we ran out of those.
Yeah, that's not,